Okay, if everybody could grab a seat, we're going to get the open mic started pretty soon. I hope everybody that's signed up for the open mic is in this room right now. We have a pretty full list. I just wanted to thank everybody again for coming out tonight and for reading and for saving the planet. We did it. The planet has been saved. I got the memo. Trump is out of office. The whole administration's down in flames. We're safe. We're good for a couple more years anyway. So thank you. It's writing poems is such an optimistic thing to do, just in itself. It's such a weird container to put all of our hopes and dreams and anguish and joy into, and yet we do it. Thinking that there's going to be an audience, the poetry audience, which is small to begin with, but then to think that there's a future for that audience, it's incredibly optimistic, and it's an act of faith that humanity will move forward. My wife is an ecologist, so I get a frontline report almost daily about where the planet and our city and everything is, which can be pretty deterring. But she goes out every day and does her job, and I try to write poems, we try to write poems, and communicate with one another. So thank you. That's where that was going. Thanks. Open mic time. So we're going to kick off the open mic tonight with Jeanette Schaefer. Where's Jeanette?
Hello. I've been writing a lot of poems lately about heritage, namely my Venezuelan heritage, being half Hispanic, half white, and also about growing up in Detroit. So these are two poems from those efforts. The first one is called Ode to My Birthmark. My abuelita had one on the same leg, the left one, as did Tia Alicia, brown with ragged borders, an island on a map. There is a legend that birthmarks indicate how a past version of yourself died, a scar from an ancient mortal wound. I think we must have all died together, witches three, a coven and a covenant, a brand on our limb that says, yes, we will return together. I trace my finger on the nubby moon rock surface, this protuberance from the rest of my skin, this one part of me that is brown like my ancestors, connects me to them, marks my body with a spell, so I am not the pale witch left behind. And this one is called Barn Burning. In the red barn, we found magazines with naked children, thick black rectangles of ink blotting out their eyes. In the red barn, we saw the first vagina that didn't belong to us, hair thick, black, and coarse, hands tied above her head, legs splayed, red lace, torn fishnets, flesh bursting through the holes. We ran from the slats between the rotting wood. In the red barn, we found a rat, dead and heavy. First, we poked it with a stick. I grabbed the tail, held it up as it turned like a chicken on a spit. I laid it across your palm. It was full of coins that crumbled beneath the dead skin. You took it in the house, showed it to mother. She beat you as she screamed. In the red barn, our landlord took the neighbor girl we called Libby the Lisper, and he touched her privates before she went away for keeps. We crawled into her empty yard and took apples from their tree. Mother turned them into pies and cobbler, asked if he had rubbed us, you know, down there. In the red barn, I hid with my first lover, a Pakistani boy my dad called a towelhead. In the dark, I could only see the whites of his eyes, but I felt him everywhere. My pale legs wrapped around his brown hips, his mouth ablaze on my shoulder. I burned the barn down with a misspent cigarette. Another thing hidden, too terrible to confess, except that here and now I am ready, and this is how I will tell you.
So we offer the open mic every week here at the series. The rules are two poems, two pages that you can read. Two poems or two pages. Spread the word. Let people know. We love to hear new voices as a part of the series. And it's a good way to become a featured reader as well, if you're wondering. Next up, we have media darling Matthew Eucia.
All right, here's the A side. It's called St. John Minadeo. Whenever I see a crossing guard's bright yellow raincoat, I think of St. John Minadeo. The car, brakes failed, rolling out of control down Hazelwood Avenue. The driver honking, flailing one arm out of the window. John pushing the last classmate out of the way a split second before martyrdom. And I think of what it means to make this city my home, and of the time before it was decided that mending the seams that sew our world together was just too taxing, and that it was a good idea to take care of things just like St. John Minadeo did. B-side, a walk to the diner interrupted, and I try to go full Emily Dickinson here, sorry. A cool spring morning, enticed by pancakes, red light. In the crosswalk, a pigeon on Penwood, an automotive casualty. From below, the remnants of an egg yet to be formed. Green light. Thank you.
My understanding of the fool Emily Dickinson is that you can sing the poem to the Yellow Rose of Texas. Can you do that?
No?
No? Okay. All right. Well, then it's not the fool Emily Dickinson. Next up, we've got Artie Solomon. Artie.
Thanks to Dawn, and thanks especially to the great poets that came before me. I'm thinking of Barbara, I'm thinking of Arlene and Jeanette, just fabulous today. First, this poem is a thanks to the Pittsburgh putting on the Jazz Festival, which is gonna be this weekend coming up. Lots of great people gonna be there. And it's one of the art forms that we, besides poetry, that we have great deep roots in here in Pittsburgh. So Charlie Parker, who was the great alto sax player in the bebop era. Improvise, improvise, sounds like a poet's cries to a self struggling with itself that goes on until he dies. Kansas City kid, you did it on the fly, did it despite your habit that calmed your jumping rabbit. Your sax, your axe rang supreme. Notes flew in all directions, riffs, chords, all kinds of connections. You made bebop the scene. Chan, yard bird, or plain bird, didn't matter, didn't mind what they named you. Dizzy bird didn't blame you if heroin your mind had blurred. But that was not the case, poured forth melodies at frantic pace. Did you sense death closing in on those remarkable chops and chin? And my last poem kind of fits with the theme today, result of deforestation, not planting enough shrubs and trees and things, and extreme climate change that's going on across the world, especially here in our country. Mudslides. Mudslides, mud pies, mud never hides. Tracked in, nature's graffiti on rugs. Dark brown weaves, ones chosen to camouflage the mud. Vacuum it right up, but What if microorganisms make up a part of it? No wonder nature abhors a vacuum. Take a knife, a good butter knife. Don't tell your wife. Saw back and forth between the ridges of your mud cake tennies. Shake the loose stuff out on a newspaper about all the local is good for. Rain, incessant, insolent, impudent rain, saturates soil, manufactures mudslides. Shallow-rooted plants, innocuous rocks begin the parade to the bottom. Shrubs and trees, forget their roots, trek next. Back porches and decks, never to host another barbecue, follow. Whole houses, projects proceed, entire zip codes zapped away. Finally, whole civilizations sliding to oblivion. Hey, let's not get carried away. Thank you.
If you haven't signed up for Joan's Poetry Blast, there is a section on here for you to do that. And we encourage the readers for the open mic to also sign up just so we have contact information. We may have to contact you for bail or other things. It's to be expected. It's a standard poetry procedure for open mics. Yeah, see? Next up, Dean Hazelton. Dean, come on up.
I'm going to read just one very short poem. It's a set of three haikus, which all have the same theme. And that theme is that you don't have to go out into the woods if you want to live with a natural world. Title is Cohabitation 1.0. My shy kitchen mouse struggles across the counter, dragging a peach pit. Second, for each crumb that hits my floor, there is an ant that carries it away. And the third, the flood through my leaky roof washes away the mud wasp's nest. Thank you.
Right. Mark Seppi. Come on up, Mark.
Hi. I've read here a lot, so I'm sorry if I monopolize the open mic. What is it to save the planet, though? This is Starfish by Mary Oliver. In the sea rocks, in the stone pockets under the tide's lip, in water dense as blindness, they slid like sponges, like too many thumbs. I knew this, and what I wanted was to draw my hands back from the water. What I wanted was to be willing to be afraid. But I stayed there. I crouched on the stone wall while the sea poured its harsh song through the sluices. While I waited for the gritty lightning of their touch, while I stared down the tides leaving where sometimes I could see them, their stubborn flesh lounging on my knuckles. What good does it do to lie all day in the sun, loving what is easy? It never grew easy, but at last I grew peaceful. All summer my fear diminished as they bloomed through the water like flowers. Like flecks of an uncertain dream, while I lay on the rocks, reaching into the darkness, learning little by little to love our only world. That was, clump for Mary Oliver. I've read this here before, but it is sour cherry season, and I've picked a lot of sour cherries. So this is called Stone Fruit. It's in three parts. And the first line is taken from a Merwin poem. This is what I have heard. This is a tree that was struck by lightning. It lives despite it. A branch was here, and now it's not. The sky has taken it. or earth, and what makes an earth? Beetles, worms, grasses pecked through robins. Watch seasons end over in cycling, their freeze and thaw born rain and drought. Look for yourself and hard enough. That is where it lies. That is where it laid. That is where the shadow used to cast. 2. A cherry needs deeper winter to make the fruit uncountable. The numbers in our mouths turn around while our body knows too many. Try them. Tongue swell beneath the tart. Pit, a place between the two. 3. Don't mistake this. You wouldn't. I'll show you. These are my hands. You can see the things held within these hands. Here, a stone that sinks. Here, a stone that won't. Thank you.
Our last reader tonight is Hannah Nathanson. Sorry. Come on up, Hannah. Thank you.
Going to read one poem called Gift Wrap. Taylor, your medicine is here, calls the mother from the front door. 4 seconds and he comes running, feet drumming the stairs like Christmas morning gift wrap waits. Drugstore envelope sitting under the tree, gift tag whispering his name. He used to bask in the satisfaction of unmasking each toy, a little moment of joy. He's snorting in his bedroom. The mother hears the sound of medicine breaking the chains of neck pain. She turns up the TV. The father is snoring. He won't remember his dreams, but he's having nightmares of his son out on the streets. The sister halts in the upstairs hallway, sees Taylor framed by his doorway, liquidized inside his skin. Lullaby, the angel of legal heroin. Face droops, frozen frown, 2 eyes caved out of a corpse. The sister waves, but he just stares and sits there. Chin fuzz needs a shave, smells like he escaped from his grave, sits on a dirt-stained mattress on a filth-colored carpet, staring like his body's cut and pasted there. She remembers his World of Warcraft phase when he wouldn't leave his room for several days. He never spoke to her then either, but at least his facial expression changed. When football started, he spoke, but always complained that his coach kept saying to channel his rage into the game, but he just didn't have enough anger contained. He said he couldn't play anymore because he always woke up already drained. She remembers one day she was smoking weed, listening to the rain, and heard him crying. It drowned out the sounds outside. She rolled her eyes and put her earphones in, never even thought about his pain. Now a force field blurs him, muffles his voice. The doctor refrained from listening ghost-like as a side effect. The sister swears it was that one fucking game when he slammed his head too hard into this teammate and got his neck pain that made a bait in the sick game of giving drug companies capitalistic gain. She can just picture the doctor getting a visit from some drug rep woman with a briefcase and a big smile on her face, ready to give a cheerful pitch on all the benefits of brand name opioid plus a free turkey sandwich. Doctors won't prescribe the drug that fits. They're just like the guy who sits at the entry of Bath and Body Works who says, "What are you looking for today? Our special soap will keep your demons away. Please enter and enjoy any one of our perfect blends of happiness. If you like it, sign up for free rewards so you can just keep getting more and more and more." The sister passes by his doorway, goes back to her room. The doctors are the real gateway, but it doesn't matter anyway. Those magic pills aren't here to stay. Another refill request is underway. Hopefully he'll just go back to playing World of Warcraft all day. But that fantasy space won't fully encase him. He'll want to taste something better. He'll take the cheaper option and it'll either be laced or just erase what's left of him, unless Oxy gets him. Best case scenario, the cops arrest him. This drug infested him. It nested in him and he used to be normal, but the drug bested him. The drug did it. She couldn't have predicted this shit. The sister takes a hit.